The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. How is everybody doing? Coming up here in just a little bit. When liberals go so far, they make liberals say, you got to be kidding me. Because that's where we're at right now. All part of the discussion that we started earlier this week, because earlier this week is when there were a number of articles out there. Former San Francisco Mayor Willie Davis. Yes.
Yeah. Willie Brown.
Willie Brown. Yes. Willie, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you very much, Willie Brown. Thank you.
Why do we both blank on that?
I don't know. Because we do. Because we have this...
Simultaneous...
Our symbiotic Wi-Fi brains are somehow...
We lose service at the same time.
We need to be rebooted at the same time. Yeah, right. Willie Brown. Oh, sorry, I said Willie Davis. Is he a football player? And a few others out there that we just mentioned him, but there were more than that coming out and stating, look, the Democrats have to do something different. They just can't be doing what they're doing. From Fox News, Doug Schoen.
Right.
Wrote the same thing. They got to be. Mm-hmm. But none of them will say what they need to do.
Right.
And we said, well, they can't change. Well, they need to relate to the average person. And they need to relate and talk to the working person. How? Nobody can say how. And they've got to stop this bashing of Trump each and every day. The bashing of Trump isn't working. And then you had Bernie Sanders' son, who's running for the congressional office in New Hampshire, saying, well, Democrat candidates have to make their people feel good. See, Trump and the Republicans make their people feel good. Well, you've got a really uphill battle there. Because? Why because? Well, because you keep telling them they're victims and they can't make it. You can't make it. Everything's against you.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm very happy with that message being communicated to me. So I'm a loser? You're a loser. You can't make it. You need help. You can't make it on your own. You're a victim. You'll always be a victim.
That's empowering.
Except when we choose that you're going to be the oppressor.
That's right.
But you're a victim. Oh, thank you for making my life so much better. You should be a football coach.
I feel empowered. Well, for whatever reason, it's the narrative, and there are a number of reasons, and some are claiming on the left and saying, well, all you're doing is motivating his base. When you do nothing but go after him, and by the way, it really has been completely full-on, 100% since election day, since they lost. And you can't reverse it. It's not going to be turned around. That's not going to happen. But what they're afraid of, these that are saying it, at least a number of them have been, or a couple of them have been very clear. You're motivating his base. Do more of this. You're going to motivate his base because you're making the party by comparison look bad.
Now, wait till you hear one of these coming up. And I actually know the one guy. Who is a longtime liberal in New York, and wait to hear this story about what he's even saying. You got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me. And he's a liberal.
Yeah.
But again, it is New York, where if you're just a liberal, that isn't enough.
Mm.
It's getting to be now. If you're not a communist, it's not enough. But I want to go to Anthony in Raleigh, North Carolina. We've been talking about New York Times story yesterday that has basically in the New York Times story leaked to them the spy was looking at Papadopoulos and Carter Page, which brings into question, when did the investigation begin? Let's go to Anthony in Raleigh, North Carolina, because a few other people have had this narrative by email, and we want to address it. Anthony, hi, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, morning, fellas. I appreciate you taking my phone call.
you know, when Trump came in, when he decided to vote, when he decided to run for president, he wasn't just running against the Democrats. He was running against the whole swamp. So he had enemies on each side. I mean, I think more Republicans hated him than Democrats, it seemed like, anyway. But so let's just say Hillary and Obama, the DNC, maybe they did have something that they were plotting against Trump and his people. But is it possible as well that people on the Republican Party, let's say like John McCain, I mean, he just despises and detests Donald Trump.
Where would be evidence of John McCain doing something like that?
The dossier.
You mean connection to the dossier?
Yeah, giving the dossier to the FBI.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess my question is, what power would John McCain have in terms of the investigation itself, that bogus investigation?
Right. I mean, to us, it doesn't matter whether the person who was the spy is a Democrat or somebody who or a Republican. Yeah. That doesn't matter.
Because what it comes down to, Anthony, the concern is people in a position of power that are abusing that power.
Right.
The dossier in and of itself isn't the concern. The any given player, if you just pick them out of the pack, isn't the concern. Mm-hmm. The question is, did they use their position of power to target someone getting dirt on Trump, by the way, would not be illegal. In fact, it would be expected. If you're trying to get dirt on the opposition, well, they do that all the time, and it's not necessarily, again, in and of itself, an illegal action. Where they would cross the line would be because, I mean, how many people did you have running in 2016 on the right? All of them were working against Trump at some point some degree. Well, but here's the difference. Did any of them have access to the FBI? Did any of them have the power to petition the FISA courts to get a warrant on somebody inside of his campaign? No, they did not. That's the difference.
Right.
This is a question that I thought I would ask there.
Oh, no. No. I understand because we wanted to explain that what's important is not who the spy was.
Right.
It may turn out to be that who the spy is adds a lot of information. So maybe it is important
to know their motivation. It's important to know the motivation of the person who assigned the spy.
Right. We want to know who started a counterintelligence investigation, who ordered it.
Right.
That's what we want to know and why they ordered it. Why? To get down to it, doesn't matter whether the spy is a Democrat or Republican. Mm-hmm. It is who ordered it in the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. Who decided in the Obama administration that we are going to open a counterintelligence investigation on the opposing candidate?
Right.
And what is the specific solid evidence or probable cause that we have to start this investigation?
Mm-hmm.
What is the specific, forget about probable cause, what is the specific allegation here, and is the specific allegation even credible? Because what we're concerned about is if you have an opposing party that is in power, and in order to win a presidential election, that they do surveillance in order to get information, in order to destroy the opposing candidate, and they use law enforcement, federal law enforcement, and federal prosecutors in order to do it, and the federal courts in order to do it, and the secret court who issues secret warrants to do that. That's what we're concerned about. Because at that point, nobody should be worried about the Russian involvement in our elections. At that point, it's Americans involved in our elections. that we need to be concerned about,
yeah,
and whether they are doing things that are downright illegal in order to stay in power.
Opposition research is something that's always going to be done. You look for the dirt. You try and verify the dirt. This is the other part of the dossier. This is unverified. Turned out to be that much of it just complete garbage. Well, then of that, again, no problem. Still no problem. No law broken. Now the question, was that the basis of an investigation? Was it, did they know that it was unverified? Did they know that it was bogus information and use it anyway to petition the FISA courts for a warrant or a number of warrants?
And as we've always said, it's, I think, as an investigator, if you're coming from it from an investigator mindset, not a political mindset,
mm-hmm,
but if you see the fact of the FISA application and you know that the dossier was used,
mm-hmm,
and yet the law enforcement did not use and tell you that it was specifically the Hillary Clinton campaign and the DNC that funded was the money behind getting this information. Number one, you need to question at that point whether it is true intelligence that came from the intelligence agencies. And the second part of it is what you're admitting. And this, to me, was the big one that a judge I know would say, what? What you would be saying to that FISA judge is, we want a secret warrant on the opposition candidate because we believe that he colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. Well, how do you know that? We know that because the Hillary campaign and the Democrats paid for information from the Russians. So the Democrats and the Hillary campaign colluded with the Russians in order to get unverifiable information against Donald Trump to change the outcome of the election. That's why they didn't say it was Hillary and the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
I have never heard anybody, we put it that way over and over again on our show. Other people know it. I don't believe anybody's ever said it in that exact way that we have said it.
Right.
That's the reason why. Because what they'd be going to get a secret warrant, and their evidence is exactly the evidence that they're using to support the accusation against the target that they're going after. They got that evidence by the opposition party doing the exact same thing that they're accusing their target of doing.
Right. If the DNC and the Hillary campaign went out and got a file of information, dirt on Trump, and then brought it to the American people during the campaign and said, look, you know, leaked it to the media, that wouldn't necessarily, just generally speaking, be illegal. That's not illegal.
No, you could sit there.
That's Hillary, done all the time.
Hillary could have got the information, said, I have information that Trump was with prostitutes in Russia.
Well,
she could say that.
Because what is the interesting, if you look at the point of hypocrisy here in the media. They're acting as if they don't even know about getting the dirt on the opposition, because what were they focused on? Well, you know, you had Trump was going to go meet with the Russian lawyer. Why? Because he thought he could get dirt on Hillary. He was told they might have dirt on Hillary. And then the media goes, oh, he was just trying to get dirt on Hillary. This is the same media that's been saying now for well over a year without any facts to back it up that Trump worked with the Russians to fix the election.
Yep.
Trump was trying to get dirt on Hillary.
And the same ones that don't seem to be bothered that the Hillary campaign and the DNC were attempting to get dirt on Donald Trump and got unverifiable dirt,
right,
which they used to attempt to change the election. And then when they couldn't change the outcome of the election, wanted to change the legitimacy of the election.
Right.
Where's the media's outrage about that?
Right.
Can you believe they did that? But Donald Trump's campaign tried to get dirt and unsuccessfully did. Well, damn them.
Exactly.
mean,
and
just
so to the last caller, the concern is when they start using government agencies and law enforcement in order to act politically and undermine the campaign, the election, and then the presidency. Because we're still here. This is not over. We have a special counsel that has been assigned to this. What, a year this week?
A year this week, yeah. And, it's been and remember, the investigation, a year and 10 months.
Right.
Well, no, maybe more than a year and 10 months.
Wait a minute. That's right.
I forgot.
Wait
the
a minute.
Time story
we're going, by, we're going yeah. by yesterday's timeline.
Yes,
that's
the new
changed.
Timeline. Yes.
Well, but look at that. This is still going on. And the question is, why? And did anybody abuse their power?
866-90-RED-EYE.
In 2017, 41.4% of road check violations were a result of issues related to vehicle brake systems. Not only is it important to keep your brake system in tip-top shape to avoid being placed out of service, it's necessary in order to keep your vehicle running at optimal performance. Here is a tip to keep your brake system in the best shape possible. Drain your air tanks daily. Brake system air tanks, while often overlooked, are a crucial part of proper maintenance. Pay attention to the amount of water and contaminants that escape. Too much moisture in the tanks is not good and can indicate that the air dryer is not functioning properly. The next CBSA International Road Check is June 5th through the 7th, so be sure to get inspected today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Also coming up on the bottom of the hour, interesting new study that has been done. Are electric cars worse for the environment? And what they say is, yes, it is.
You're killing the planet with your electric car.
Look, it's something that you and I have said for the longest time with the electric car. That when you look at the batteries, when you look at the energy that is needed, and especially when it comes to global warming gases and everything else to produce it, to destroy it, to get rid of it, to get rid of the batteries, to how you power it and everything else, then the fact that as we all know that if you're using alternative power, that alternative power must be backed up by what? Traditional power that's more consistent. If you take the total energy use, and from the production to the destruction of an electric car, we have always stated it's either just about even or more. They're stating here they believe it's more.
Mm. Wow.
Pollution is actually caused. So we will get to that. Plus, just a couple of stories. One in particular. One is about Keith Ellison, who is second in command of the Democrat Party, who is talking about, yes, he believes that government should regulate the pay structure of companies.
Uh-huh. All right.
That's how radical they're getting. Yes, companies, federal government should get involved and set the pay scale for companies and CEOs and everything else. Wow.
Yeah. All right.
And then the new proposed law in New York to get rid and ban high school rifle teams and archery teams.
There you go.
That has sent one of the biggest liberals I have ever known, has sent him off the ledge, stating, this is why we lose. This is why we lose. This is why we lose.
Right.
The NRA screams all these things that we say, come on, they're exaggerating it. We're never going to have this type of slippery slope.
And here we
end up having that slippery slope.
Oh, yeah.
And this is coming from one of the biggest liberals I have ever dealt with. That and more on the way.
Just- They scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So you ready for a couple of stories here?
All right.
And these are pretty good stories. This out of New York.
Mm.
And this is where the state legislature is considering. There is now a bill that has been introduced that would ban high school rifle, the air school, the school's rifle teams and archery teams.
Okay.
This is an editorial written by Rod Watson, who works for the Buffalo News.
Okay.
Rod, I dealt with when I was a talk show host there, yeah, is one of the most liberal people you're ever going to meet.
Yeah.
Rod, this may be a slight exaggeration, but you understand the point I'm trying to make here.
Very liberal.
Rod would make Maxine Waters seem like Ronald Reagan. He goes, the chance of this bill could pass could happen. There's an asinine bill from a downstate assembly member who wants to ban air rifle and archery as school sports on the ridiculous assumption that shooting on a school team creates, quote, a gun culture. It is anti-gun zealots like this who make life so easy for the National Rifle Association. Every time you're tempted to think that the NRA is crying wolf to gin up support when it suggests they want to take away everyone's guns, along comes more proof that the organization might be right. I can't tell you, I never thought that for the rest of my life that I'd ever be doing a national radio show and reading a column from Rod Watson, who I went after so many times when I worked up there, that I would completely and totally agree with. Never thought this would happen. Hmm. This is a big moment in my life. Ordinarily, this measure from the Democrat Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal might be considered a classic one-house bill, doomed to go no further. But with the very real possibility of Democrats also taking over the state Senate, depending on the whims of one senator, and Governor Andrew Cuomo even eager to ban any gun he can find, this threat to shooting sports is all too real. It is one more example of Democrats stretching the definition of, quote, sensible gun control until it has no meaning at all, short of simply getting rid of all firearms. I used to consider the NRA's warnings like the cover of Superman comic books, which invariably indicated the superhero was dead. But somehow, once you finished the edition, he was very much alive, and you knew you had been duped just to get your money. The NRA often operates the same way. No matter which political party is in control, it's the most perilous time in history for gun rights, so send money now. But who can dismiss the NRA's warnings after the SAFE Act, New York's handgun recertification fiasco, and now this? Why is she going after this? I don't know, said Paul Borkowski, who began coaching rifle at Aldrin Central School in 1971 and just ended his tenure as chairman of the sport. The eight rifle teams in Section 8 each have 15 to 20 or more shooters, and about half of them are women. It's a sport in which speed and size don't matter, and one that, unlike football and basketball, you can practice for a lifetime. It's an Olympic sport, he added, explaining that shooting teaches discipline, concentration, body control, and how to handle pressure. But beyond those skills, which many sports teach, shooting also teaches something else that's vitally important: a respect for guns and what they can do, an appreciation for firearm safety, an appreciation that can prevent the kind of misuse, accidental and otherwise, that leads to tragedy. The coach said he can't recall any such tragedies ever involving any of the kids on the school rifle teams. So there you go. And, you know, this is, again, an archery, too. They want to get rid of archery.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, if you want to know, and this is so important because you and I have talked about, you know, where the Democratic Party is going. This is where they're going, to the point where somebody who was even, like I said, one of the most liberal people I ever dealt with in my career, you know, some of his columns used to write, it was like, wow, you can't believe this. And to see this, and to see now his defense of gun rights and the going against the gun grabbers in New York, it's amazing to see this from somebody who was absolutely aligned with the Democrat Party, absolutely aligned with liberalism, and now is defending the NRA, saying, I used to think the NRA was paranoid. They're not.
Well, this is exactly what we have been talking about, more so after the election, but for years. Now, we've been saying that the liberals need to, you know, own it and say what, you know, you say what you believe. Well, that started happening a few years back. I think it started happening in part because they had, I fully believe, that they believed they had won the White House and American politics forever when Obama won and then won again, a two-term president. That it was the changing of an America, of a nation, and as a nation, we were going to become more liberal. Now, in some ways, we actually have. Even Republicans have moved further left. We've talked about that on some of the issues. But what happened with the Democrats? Well, you see it. Identity politics rules. You're not going to change that. You will not change it. And the reason you won't be able to change it is because you created it. You nurtured that culture. You nurtured that mentality. And we've got a couple of generations now under our belt of people who were raised to think this way, and they don't know any other way. And they know now, because of social media and how many different ways to get attention for themselves, that they can go out, as you taught them to do, and become a victim for a different reason every day. And as all of those different reasons form different groups, they all start to, well, at some point, conflict with other groups on the left. And what you're seeing is the erosion of that group as a whole. Doesn't mean they're not going to win elections in the future. That's not the point. The point being, how do you promote something? How do you promote values? One set of values as a party anymore? You can't. Because if it's a Kamala Harris, if it's a whoever it might be, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, or whoever the future of the party is, whoever's going to run in 2020, tell me how you stand on the stage at the DNC and acknowledge and serve each of those groups and subgroups who are protesting. Well, they started at the 2016. Remember, they were essentially acknowledging some of those groups on stage. That's going to happen on campaign stops and everywhere else that you appear, which is pretty much everywhere because of social media. You can't get away from it because you're going to be shamed the moment that you ignore even one of those groups. And that's their problem. They can't reverse this because they built this. You can't tear it down and start over. This was supposed to be the insanity that came from all of it, because they had nowhere. Where else were they going to go? Where else were they going to go? When we talk about that slippery slope, and years ago we said it and we'd get calls. Oh, you guys and your slippery slope, blah, 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 blah. Well, here we are. And it happens again and again and again. And why is that? Because politicians believe that they need to cater to those protesters and those individuals again, and that culture that they created on the very far left that is doing nothing but growing. It's not slowing down. Dianne Feinstein is too conservative for her party. No one wants Nancy Pelosi as the speaker if they win in the fall, because No, that was yesterday. Who wrote
the article that she's the most conservative candidate in the primary?
Exactly. Well, and you look at it, because what is it? The group doesn't need you anymore. Any individual protest group out there doesn't need you anymore because you didn't do anything for them. Acknowledging them on stage, even, that's not enough. I mean, just go ask the Boy Scouts. I'm sorry. Go ask the Scouts. And they'll tell you, the moment you start responding, that's when you hand it over. Well, the party responded. Well, you hand it over, but you got to hand it over to every group and subgroup. They own you. But the problem is they all have different motivations. They want something for themselves, each of those groups, and those groups get more and larger by the number in terms of the numbers. They get more and more every day, grow more and more every day. This is the insanity that you created because you built it on that emotion.
I didn't.
Exactly. But responding to the left and this guy in the Buffalo
oh,
News.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right.
Well,
right,
you are
right.
From Buffalo, so it's, you're part of it.
It is my fault. It's okay.
Yeah, but you're not from Buffalo, Buffalo. You're from the Buffalo area. Quit saying you're from Buffalo.
Yes, I got chastised already for that.
but
I grew up a mile from the border.
That's not Buffalo. But, that's the whole problem. But it's your problem because you created it. If you're one of those that was doing this in the past and telling them and pointing out, well, this, I'm not saying there aren't victims out there, but the difference is you created victims in people who weren't victims, and now you kept asking them to go out every day and find a reason to be a victim for a different reason every single day. Every generation is going to get louder and louder and louder, and the number of those groups is going to grow every day. It's happening already. It happened since the election, as we said it would. Now, how they get together for an election, there's one thing. One thing they come together on. We hate Trump. That's the one thing that motivates them. Okay, but how do you motivate people?
By the way, the Cheesecake Factory update, the Cheesecake Factory said two workers at one of its Miami restaurants are no longer employed there after making disparaging remarks about a customer's hat bearing the slogan President Donald Trump's campaign, Make America Great Again. No guest should ever feel unwelcome in one of our restaurants, and we are very sorry, the chain said in a statement on Twitter. The investigation is continuing into the incident, which occurred on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It said that as of Tuesday, the two staff members are no longer with the company. As we know, the man who was apparently wearing the Make America Great hat again was black.
Yes. And according to the reports and the witnesses in those reports, they were harassing them, those individuals at that table, along with him, to no end.
Supporting Trump while black.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Nope. I can't imagine how furious I would be if I was witness to that. I can't imagine. At first, the company suspended the employees, and then, as you just mentioned, Gary, the update that two of the employees have been fired.
Look, if you want it, you go down, you see somebody with, and whatever. Mm-hmm. People will comment on it.
Right.
To be in the employment setting and comment on anything that anybody is wearing when they walk into your store, unless it's pornographic and they must be taken out of the store.
Right.
But anything there to sit there, I mean, forget about the political part of it, that you have people that actually are in the place of employment, mm-hmm, and don't know the proper decorum of how you treat your customers, that seem to have no clue whatsoever that it's their place and it's their time and they get to do whatever they want on somebody else's dime. Well, you mm-hmm don't. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866 90 Red Eye. One of the things, and we'll talk a little bit about it as we go through some of the news items that we'll be talking about today, is that Hamas yesterday admitted that 50 out of the 62 that were killed were members of Hamas. And as newsbusters.org sort of points out, and the media sort of got off that story at that time.
Right.
Okay, maybe it wasn't the Israelis just shooting innocent citizens who were doing nothing.
Right.
Maybe it wasn't that.
Yeah, and again, the media jumping the gun on another huge story and making it something that it's not.
And then just
but that, by the way, that's been going on with Israel in regards to Israel and Hamas for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. What's different now is, well, you have Hamas, like we said yesterday. I don't know how many times you said it on the air yesterday. Hamas isn't denying anything. They promote it. They're proud of their actions. And that's why they came out and said 50 of these were Hamas.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Wow, we're ready to a Thursday, aren't we?
I can't believe this week has just flown by. Too much going on. We've got the Gina Haspel confirmation vote.
Mm-hmm.
She made this statement. She doesn't believe the CIA should have done the enhanced interrogation. That was probably necessary to just kind of get, you know, pass this vote. It's not going to happen anyway. We're not bringing back that technique. She didn't have the, won't have the authority to bring it back. And that's kind of the, you know, been the grandstanding that's going on there in the Senate. We'll should see a full vote maybe in the next day or two, actually. So then the Supreme Court, someone was at SCOTUS blog showing the number of cases or decisions handed down. They said they're like at a record slow pace right now, SCOTUS is.
Yeah, they say it's because one of the reasons they're guessing is that because Gorsuch likes to write his own opinions.
Right.
And that's slowing it down because when you write your opinion, then everybody else has to read your opinion to have an ability to respond in their own way if they wish to respond,
mm-hmm.
which just slows down the process a little bit. But, hey, as long as they come to the right decision, I don't care if it takes a month or two longer.
Right.
The other big news yesterday was the Daily Caller had it. Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal covered it on Twitter last night.
Mm.
And this was the New York Times story that talked about the beginning of, you know, the Trump investigation and what the name was called and all that, Crossfire Hurricane, Hurricane Crossfire. It's been referred to in both ways. But the thing that we found out, and I'll just read it directly from her Twitter feed. So a few important points on that new New York Times Hurricane Crossfire piece. A story that, by the way, all of us following knew this had to be coming. This is a Department of Justice, FBI leaker's attempt to get in front of the facts Nunes is forcing out to make it not sound so bad. Don't buy it. It's bad. The biggest takeaway, government sources admit that indeed the Department of Justice, the Obama Department of Justice, and the FBI spied on the Trump campaign. Spied. Though the New York Times kindly says calls a spy an informant, The New York Times slips in the confirmation far down in the story and makes it out like it's not a big deal. It is a very big deal. That's, by the way, that's directly from Kimberly. In a self-serving desire to get a sympathetic story about its actions, the Department of Justice and the FBI leakers are willing to provide yet more details about that top secret source, namely that spying was aimed at Page and Papadopoulos, making all more likely certain the source will be outed. That is on them. The Department of Justice and the FBI and its leakers have shredded what little credibility they have in claiming they cannot comply with the subpoena. They are willing to provide details to friendly media, but not Congress. They're willing to risk the very source they claim they need to protect. Back in December, the New York Times assured us that it was the Papadopoulos downer conversation that inspired the FBI to launch the official counterintelligence operation in July of 2016, which was convenient because it diminished the role of the dossier. However, now the New York Times tells us the FBI did not debrief Downer until August 2nd. And Nunes says no official intelligence from allies was delivered about that conversation prior to July 31st. So how did the FBI get the details from Downer? And what really did inspire the counterintelligence investigation against the Donald Trump campaign? As for whether to believe the line that the FBI operated soberly, oh good, they weren't drunk, soberly, carefully, and judiciously in 2016, the main source for this judgment is, by the way, that's what
how she wrote it.
Sally Yates, who was in the middle of it all.
Yep.
A bit like asking Putin to reassure that Russia didn't meddle in our election.
Mm-hmm.
On that, if you're wondering who narrated the story, note paragraphs that assure everyone that hardly anybody in the Department of Justice knew about the probe. Oh, and Comey also was given few details. Nobody knew nothing.
That's right. Deny, deny, deny.
Because when you require a whole story saying you behaved, it means you know you didn't. So that's where we are. We know that the now through the New York Times that it is true. You know, we had talked about it earlier this week. It's a year.
Yeah.
It's a year now of the Mueller investigation. And we're learning more. We are learning nothing about the politicians, any politician, colluding with the Russians from the Mueller campaign. We're learning, or the Mueller investigation. We're learning everything of what happened from outside of the Mueller investigation. We have 1,000 times more information about damning things that went on in election of 2016 from outside the government investigations or the Mueller investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Comey knew little about it. Right. Mm-hmm. Comes down to it is it's real simple. The identity of the person will lead us to why they were there. That's what is going to matter. The motivation of who put this person, this spy, as Kimberly Strassel calls him, in place. What was the mission? What was the basis for that? I mean, this is what the House Intel Committee is trying to find out. Devin Nunes is trying to find out, where did this all begin? What was the basis for the counterintelligence investigation? It's a simple question. Because if it's on the up and up, Gary, don't you think the Department of Justice would be, and the FBI would be very eager to show them? To prove the point? But instead, what did you have? You had the deputy AG, Rosenstein, screaming, this is extortion. And now you see these stories, as Kimberly Strassel points out in this series of tweets last night, this should be alarming to every American. This is a big deal. This is bad. And it's just a matter of time. She points out in one of the tweets, we're about to learn this name. We're going to learn who this person is. But more importantly, from that, we're going to learn why they were there. That's what has to be learned by the American people. You had the House Freedom Caucus. They were encouraging the president to just get this thing done. Declassify this. Get it all out. Let all that information out so the American people can know the truth.
That was, yeah, that's the other big story that came out yesterday was the House Freedom Caucus.
Right. And Devin Nunes at the Department of Justice. Keep in mind what's going on here. So Devin Nunes at the Department of Justice yesterday, another meeting, again, and we haven't heard. We don't know what kind of progress there might be. Last week, Friday, when they were there, they issued a joint statement, Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunes, and they said it was a very productive meeting, and they look forward to this week's meeting. And so if you look at the timeline of the two major stories that have been leaked to the media over the last 2 weeks, or week and a day, a week ago Tuesday, you had the big meeting about, again, Devin Nunes getting access to the Department of Justice. On that same day, that leak story gets to the Washington Post. And then yesterday, Devin Nunes at the Department of Justice. Again, we have no idea what came of that meeting, what was done, if it was productive. But you had this story leaked to the New York Times. You can't convince me that that was a coincidence. This sounds like someone or a group of people at the Department of Justice or at the FBI that right now is scrambling. They are afraid. They're trying to get ahead of this. They're trying to disarm this by using the friendly media. That's what they're trying to do. And that's exactly what Kimberly Strassel is pointing out.
Well, as she said in her column, I believe it was late last week, she said this is just scratching the surface of what happened.
Right.
More coming up, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue acknowledged what he called legitimate anxiety over trade deals like NAFTA.
It looks not as optimistic regarding the NAFTA renewal right now as it did.
Why does he have this opinion?
I think it's more of a workload issue. We've got engaged with China over some trade issues. Yes. And I think Ambassador Lighthizer's had his hands full in various areas with EU and steel and aluminum tariffs.
He says the three sides, the United States, Canada, and Mexico, are close to a NAFTA deal in principle, but that time is running out.
It's getting short to where Congress could approve the Trade Promotion Authority of NAFTA. So we're not as optimistic as we once were, but I am long-term optimistic that NAFTA will be renewed and we will maintain those markets.
The secretary's comments came in an interview with the Coloradoan newspaper in Fort Collins. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I'm just reading Margot Cleveland's column in the Federalist.com. As she goes through, she goes through who might have been one of the other sources in the FBI, but not the not the spy. But it's a long article, and it goes into the minutiae of a lot of different things. But it's just what she says here. She said, talking about the whole loose lips thing of Papadopoulos and being drunk and everything else, and proclaiming that the Russians have Hillary's emails. And as Kimberly Strassel says, that wouldn't have seemed sufficient to launch an investigation against the Trump campaign, given that at the time Hillary had admitted that she had deleted 30,000 emails from her account because they weren't work-related. Mm. Also, pretty much everyone had acknowledged that with Hillary's use of an unsecured homebrew server, the Russians likely already had access to those emails.
Yeah, wow.
And so, I mean, from the very beginning, when they talked about Papadopoulos, people just said, no, it doesn't, if they started off, they've got to justify it because everyone knew at that point. Everybody knew about the emails at that time.
Right. Well, again, they keep...
Remember, it was July of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Comey had already spoke on July 5th.
Right.
We knew about all the emails.
Yeah.
And the assumption was already out there that, look, she was hacked.
Yeah. I don't know that anybody denied that once everything came out, that there was there were probably multiple attempts. What they couldn't do is they couldn't specify, you know, those attempts or who might have succeeded in those attempts.
Right. If you're the Secretary of State, believe me, the Russians were trying to hack anything that you had.
Oh, yeah.
And if you had a personal computer in your home, it was hacked.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he had said that the Russians have Hillary's emails, would have not surprised the FBI at that time at all, or anybody in the intelligence agencies.
Right.
They would have said, well, yeah, she had an unsecured server. We all know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, they keep creating these false starting points.
And I just thought about this.
Mm.
If you're going to go and start an investigation on Hillary's 30,000 emails that the Russians had, and they got them because she had an unsecured server, wouldn't she be the first one in jail? Shouldn't she be the first one in jail?
I don't know. I don't know that any reasonable prosecutor would pursue.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking, if the whole thing started because Papadopoulos said the Russians had Hillary's emails, and, you know, hey, you never know, we could get a hold of them. But everybody knows that everybody, you know, that in likelihood they had them. There was really, you know, they knew. And if the Russians had them, also other people had them.
Yes.
But the fact is, if it was so bad that the Russians had Hillary's emails and the FBI knew that the original source of those emails came from her unsecured server, which was breaking the law, before you start an investigation on the Trump campaign, wouldn't you first start an investigation, another one on Hillary, or at least prosecute her? Because that's how the whole damn thing started?
Right.
That's like the third time on this show I've used the D word. I apologize.
By the way, we would also then have to look at James Comey and his testimony and on Capitol Hill. And because he had said at one point, well, we don't know specifically who might have attempted or succeeded at any attempts, but it's pretty much a given that yes.
Oh, I'm telling you, this is like doing calculus.
Right?
I looked up, I said, is the show almost over?
No,
my mind's fried.
Because it is that tangled web that we weave, right? But at a level where if the culture was that, oh, it's okay, we can do this. I'm talking about at the top level of the FBI, the actors who would be involved in doing this. We know Peter Strzok. We know who he is, the political operative that he is. No, nobody's debating that. And by the way, he's still employed at the FBI.
Why?
Why?
That's rhetorical. I don't have an answer.
I can't answer it either. I don't know that anybody can. Somebody should. 866-90-RED-EYE for OmniTrax. Here's your forecast.
Well, the wet weather situation remains pretty much the same for the South, the Midwest, portions of the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. Heavy amounts of rain due to a stationary front, which extends from Texas up into New Jersey, and then these series of low-pressure systems are riding along this front, bringing the chance of showers throughout the day and evening. From today throughout the course of the next week, I'm calling for at least 3 inches of rain along coastal communities from Florida up through New York. Heavy showers will extend on the Atlantic coast inland into most of Florida, most of Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, on up through PA, and into New York State. An inch or two of rain over the next week for the Midwestern states, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Ohio. Same for the South, the Ark-La-Tex, the North, Central, and Southern Plains. You'll also be saving money on supplemental irrigation. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
To have the conversation. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, something you and I have been talking about for the longest time is about how we attempt, even if you believe that there are pollution and or global warming emission of gas problems in this nation, and this is something that I just can't think of his name here at the moment. Swedish. I can't think of his name. Whatever. That's for another time. He always talks about, because he believes that global warming is happening. Mm-hmm. He just believes that everything that they're doing to solve it is doing the opposite.
Right.
Isn't doing right. It's something that you and I have talked about for the long time. That even if you accept, for example, you and I remember when Congress and President Bush signed the ethanol mandate law back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
December of 2007, I believed it was signed, November or December. And by March, the liberal environmental groups went, oops, sorry, you guys were right on the right. You guys that said, like us, that said, no, probably from the research we've seen, from farm to tank, you put more global warming gases into the atmosphere by turning corn into ethanol, mm-hmm, than if you just use gasoline. By March of 2008. Wow. That's over 10 years ago, Eric.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That seems like it was yesterday. I just realized that was 10 years. By the time that the environmental groups jumped on it in March of 2008, it was too late. It was law. It's still law today, and even a Republican administration wishes to increase the amount of ethanol that's mixed in with gasoline, mm-hmm, even though we know now there is, Al Gore admitted back in what, 2010 was it, 2011? He admitted, he lied about it,
mm-hmm,
that,
yeah,
he was always pushing for ethanol, not because it was good for the environment, but because he wanted the support of the farmers, so he lied about it. So still today, 10 years later, in a Republican, this shows you how nuts we are as a society. It really does. You want an indication of how nuts we are? That 10 years later, that when we find out that the government has initiated a plan to use taxpayer money to subsidize an industry that can't make it on its own, that cannot make it on its own, and therefore subsidies from the taxpayers are needed, and the subsidies from the taxpayers to these industries and to these people are done because it will provide a solution to pollution. Ah. And then we find out that it has the opposite effect. We still can't change it. Well, this was in Politico. Jonathan Lesser, part of the latest research to look at electric cars, and talked about the fact that, you know, Governor Jerry Brown decreed that 5 million electric cars must be on the state's road by 2020 or 2025, along with 250,000 charging stations. Eight other states are following California's lead. One California lawmaker has introduced legislation to ban all internal combustion vehicles by 2040. All of this might make sense if electric vehicles, as their supporters claim, were truly likely to reduce air pollution and tackle climate change. But are they? To answer that question, I used the U.S. Energy Information Administration's most recent long-term forecast for the number of new electric vehicles through 2050, estimated how much electricity they'd use, and then figured out how much pollution that electricity would generate, looking at three key pollutants regulated by the U.S. Clean Air Act: sulfur dioxide, oxides of nitrogen and particulates, as well as CO2 emissions. I compared them to the emissions of the new gasoline-powered vehicles using the Energy Information Administration's, that's the Energy Department's, real-world miles per gallon forecast rather than the higher CAFE standard values, which means I didn't buy into the BS that's being presented on miles per gallon. I actually use the real-world miles per gallon forecast, as they should. What I found is that widespread adoption of electric vehicles nationwide will likely increase air pollution compared to the new internal combustion vehicles. You read that right. More electric cars and trucks will mean more pollution. This might sound counterintuitive. After all, you won't replacing a 30-year-old smoke-belching Oldsmobile with a new electric vehicle reduce pollution? Yes, of course, but that's also where many electric vehicle proponents' arguments run off the road. They fail to consider just how clean and efficient new internal combustion vehicles are. The appropriate comparison for evaluating the benefits of all those electric vehicles, subsidies, and mandates isn't the difference between the electric vehicle and the old gas guzzler. It's a difference between the electric car and the new gas car. And the new internal combustion engines are really clean. Today's vehicles, get this now, today's vehicles emit about 1% of the pollution that they did in the 1960s.
Oh, yeah. Even the big rigs, when you look at the big rigs that are out there, the Class 8 engines, much, much cleaner than they've ever been.
They say, as for the electric car, the energy doesn't come from nowhere. Cars are charged from the nation's electric grid, which means they're only as clean as America's mix of power sources. Those getting cleaner, but we still generate power mainly by burning fossil fuels. Natural gas is our biggest source of electricity and is projected to increase. And coal, while still declining, will still remain the second largest source of electricity for some time. Third is nuclear power, which doesn't generate emissions but has other byproducts that worry some environmentalists. Even with the large increases in wind and solar generation, the EIA projects that the nation's electric generating mix will just be 30% renewable by 2030. And that's a line of crap, by the way.
Yeah,
by the way, if you're going to use, if you're not going to use the CAFE standards, you're going to use the real world standards, then use the real world standards for what renewable power will be by 2030.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be 30%.
No, it won't.
But even if it was, still, the new gas cars win.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yep.
Based on that forecast, the EIA's projected number of electric vehicles were replaced with new internal combustion engines. Air pollution would actually decrease. And this holds true, even if you include the emissions from oil refineries that manufacture gasoline. Now, is he taking into consideration the batteries and the production of the batteries for electric cars?
And that was my next question, because you have to the mining of the materials, everything, the entire process. Now you're gonna it would be the same in terms of the materials for a gas powered engine or a vehicle with a gas powered engine, but compare those two. Compare everything from start to finish, from raw materials to that vehicle being on the road in use.
So, if electric vehicle subsidies don't help the government, who do they help? Exactly who you and I have said.
Yeah.
Most electric vehicle buyers are far wealthier than the average American.
Exactly.
A nationwide survey in 2017 found that 56% had household incomes at least $100,000 and 17% had household incomes at least $200,000. In 2016, the median household income for the U.S. as a whole was less than $58,000. So it's fair to say that the subsidies disproportionately benefit the wealthy at the expense of the poor, who cannot afford to buy even subsidized electric vehicles or live in their own homes to take advantage of residential chargers or solar panels.
Remember the CEO of GM saying the Chevy Volt, the average buyer of the Chevy Volt, was trading in a luxury car and was making, I think they said, $174,000 a year?
Yep.
And we talked about, and that related to those government subsidies going toward that purchase.
Not only that, the wires and charging stations needed to charge all those electric vehicles will be paid for by all the ratepayers,
yep, yep,
further raising electric rates. And as more wealthy customers install solar panels to charge their electric vehicles, the cost to provide them backup power will fall again on those who cannot afford to do so. In effect, the wealthy owners of electric cars will enjoy the benefits of their clean, silent cars while passing many of the costs of keeping their vehicles on the road to everybody else, especially the poor. So there you go.
Yep.
It's what we have always stated and projected out here, the two idiots overnight, if you've listened to our show for any length of time. But we continue to support policies that actually do the opposite of intended.
Yeah. Well, and you look at the marketplace. Ask any of the automakers. Well, take away the government mandates and subsidies, and let's see who's standing. Who's willing to try and deliver a product to the marketplace? Who believes that it's viable? Let's see one company that would step forward. Well, we know Elon Musk wouldn't be there.
No, he wouldn't be there. No.
Without his subsidies, he's just not in the picture.
Well, with the subsidies, he may not be in the picture long.
That seems to be the sentiment right now. But that's the whole point. But if the marketplace, if there's a call for it, if there's a way to make it efficient, cost competitive without taxpayer money, and the automakers see that, they'll deliver the product. No mandates, no subsidies.
And just so you know, that was written by Jonathan Lesser, who, hang on here, let me just get it, because he has a new book that is, or a new report that is out, and I just can't find it here at the moment I had it, and then it just, it disappeared. Hang on, just so people know where that article actually came from. Jonathan Lesser, president of Continental Economics, an economic, regulatory, and consulting firm. His new report, Short Circuit, The High Cost of Electric Vehicle Subsidies. So there you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've said it all along. We said it with the electric car specifically, and he didn't include the batteries in it, they believe that depending on how big your car is and the batteries that you have in it, you're already there before you even take it out of the parking lot. Sitting in the parking lot, it already has anywhere between 60 and 80,000 miles on it, which is the global warming gases that have been put into the atmosphere to create that vehicle and the battery for that vehicle.
Right. Now let's talk about replacing the battery. The one thing that they were running into in, was this Great Britain, I think it was? The charging stations that you could parallel park next to a charging station, but the charging station takes up the majority of the sidewalk in that space. So people were having trouble getting around. I mean, it's on a sidewalk.
So they can't walk or ride their bike.
Right, exactly. Which would be the more earth-friendly form of transportation.
866-90-RED-EYE.
the dates and location for the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs contest are set. Dave Waterman from Shell has the details.
We are going to be at White's Travel Center in Raphine, Virginia. It's a little bit outside of Lexington, Virginia, right off of I-81 and I-64. It was designed way back when as a way for Shell Rotella to give back to the trucking community, appreciation for all they did and all the support of our brand. It's an event that really encourages truckers to get together, whether they're going to show a show caliber truck or just their daily driver that might have some scratches and dings in it. It's open to all of them. And in fact, we encourage, as you know, the working truck. Judging, of course, is going to take place Thursday through Saturday. We're going to have a light contest taking place on Thursday, and then we'll do a truck parade down to Old Town Lexington. There'll also be health checks available for truckers on site. We're going to do the scavenger hunt again so folks can walk away with prizes. Just on the Shell Rotella Super Rigs part of it, it's up to $25,000 in both cash and prizes.
They want to learn more. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to Rotella.com. They can also go to whitestravelcenter.com.
This Super Rigs update is the service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. We'll end the show with good news.
Yeah?
America's manufacturers are investing in new equipment and facilities while putting more money into workers' paychecks, according to a survey released Wednesday by the National Association of Manufacturers. Emerson Chairman and CEO and Board Chairman David Farr delivered the results of the new survey to the House Ways and Means Committee in testimony on Wednesday. Of the manufacturers surveyed, 72% said they're putting money from the tax cuts back into workers' benefits and salaries.
Good.
77% said they were hiring more employees, and 86% said they were investing in equipment and building plans. Optimism for the economy reached the second highest level in 20 years.
That's
in the
20-year
history of the survey.
So. Remember all the calls, people, oh, no, when they lower taxes, they don't give that to the employees. Well, when you have to compete for employees in the marketplace and you have a greater ability to do that, you do it.
And manufacturers actually do have to compete.
They absolutely do.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.